Hey! Guess who?
Oh, you lucky, lucky people. This is like your 17th commentary with us, and there were only 13 episodes.
This is actually the... Is it the only... Well, this is the major one that we thought was going to be done by somebody else, but it couldn't be done. This was originally going to be provided for you by the lovely and wonderful Nick Campbell, late of Brighton in the UK, but... some technical difficulties arose, and he was unable to, join y'all for this. So instead, you have the Wonder Twins back again.
Basically, I think we've decided that our cool name is Too Obsessed, Too Fans. Is that what we kind of decided?
Is that Too Obsessed or Too Insane? Either way, it's appropriate.
Whatever. Well, if it's Too Insane, then it spells TIFF. Too Insane
okay,
Fans?
Let's do Too Obsessed.
Yeah. Then it's TOFF.
TOFF.
We're TOFF! Great, we're a Pertwee monster. Okay! And in case you haven't figured out, we're commenting on
Father's Day.
Written by Paul. I used to write a lot of kick-ass New Adventures Cornell.
Yeah.
Sarah and I disagree on...
this particular point, yes.
I think Paul Cornell was a great writer of the New Adventures and has kind of jumped the shark.
He was an okay writer. I actually think I like his New Adventures more now than I used to. But,
they're very adult. And not adult, like, as in, like...
Right, but they're
the
very
themes.
Adult. Yeah, Human Nature I read not so long ago. It wasn't too bad. Anyway, to make up for Nick not actually being present... Well, he wouldn't be here anyway. He'd be in Brighton. But for him not providing this commentary, he has sent along some notes that I will be reading from throughout the commentary and we'll be reacting to. And this is good because, I hate Father's Day. Or, I don't hate it, but the logical adult part of me really can't stand it. Michael, you kind of think it's okay?
I'm trying to remember. I think I remember feeling about this one when I originally watched it and blathered on in my blog about it for 17 hours, that it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I kind of remember, you know, when I was, like, in third or fourth grade, and they're like, oh, well, write a story, and you think, I'll write a story where I go back in time and I change something, and then I cease to exist. And it seemed like this was, like, that third grade assignment story.
It's very
and it's just carried out, and it's just sort of,
it's okay.
It's not really great. It's not Web Planet bad. But it's just there.
Right.
It's 42 minutes, and they pass pleasantly enough if you don't ever think about it. No. If you don't ever think too much about it.
Yeah. And meanwhile, there's Nick, who just... Well, I'm going to out you here, buddy. He likes it. He thinks it's good. I mean, not unconditionally, but he likes it. That's fine. So I thought this would actually be some really good contrast
yes.
for the three of us sort of to talk about it. Two and a half of us, something.
And I have to admit, you know, as a person who read and enjoyed Paul Cornell's NAs, This was the one outside of Dalek I was most curious about going into the season.
Yeah.
Seeing where it would go. Especially since I was essentially provided with the outline of Doctor Dances and Empty Child before the season started.
Right. I'm going to crack open a Mountain Dew here. Mountain Dew Red Light, the nectar of life.
Nope, it's not beer, though some of you may be thinking, maybe they'd be better with beer.
Yeah, well.
But,
This reminds me, actually, of a story, well, if you watch The Ninth Gate, Roman Polanski has a commentary for The Ninth Gate. It's his film. It's like a 2.5-hour film. It's really long. But it's just him talking. It's actually pretty interesting. But at one point, he stops and he says, I need to stop here and I need to light the cigar.
I don't think I see it.
And so he reaches into this desk and he takes out the cigar. Yes, go on.
Oh, I don't know.
You're going to break away from my fascinating anecdote, aren't you?
No, I was just going to say that it's interesting the way that they show him being hit by the car, but not actually showing it. So it's not...
Well, I'm thinking if this is like in general.
I think if this was in America, we would show him being run over and flying over the car and blood flying everywhere.
Well, that's true, but this particular new series of Doctor really shies away from that.
I guess Mary Whitehouse is proud somewhere.
So back to Roman Polanski.
Yes.
He says, I need to have a cigar. So he takes out the cigar and you can hear him lighting it. Ah, that is better. A few minutes tick by and he says, you know what? I think I need to have a little piece of chocolate to wash down the cigar. Let me get my little square of chocolate. So he reaches into his desk drawer and he pulls out this little square of chocolate. And you hear him nom, 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 eating this thing. 2 hours later, at the end of the commentary, he says, I am starting to lose my voice. I do not think the cigar and the little square of chocolate were such a good idea. And I always think of that every time I crack open a Coke or something to do these commentaries. I think of Roman Polanski and his chocolate and his cigar. Mm-hmm. But returning to Father's Day.
Maybe you should read some of Nick's comments, and then we can react to them.
Yes, we can.
Though you kept teasing me, like, oh, I have this story about Father's Day.
Oh, you want to hear the story about
Father's
Day?
Yes, I want to hear this, because I want to be shockingly reacting. Like,
yeah, well, I'm going to admit here that this is a slightly case of self-fulfilling prophecy to me, in that I did not expect to like this episode. I'm a little tired of Paul Cornell telling the same story over and over again. And this is just kind of the ones that I kind of wrote off from the very beginning. Paul Cornell plus time travel story? Nuh-uh. So that may be part of why I dislike it.
Well, you know, if you've seen Back to the Future, you kind of know where this is all going to go.
Right. Well, but...
And I wonder if... well, I'll get to that here in a minute. We get the POV, the classic point of view shot of the monster. I wonder if the preview... You know, the preview kind of ruined what the monsters look like.
That's true.
It does kind of, you know, imagine if in, because I've been watching Horror Fang Rock on DVD.
Ooh,
if you knew what the Rutan looked like
right
before you got to episode 4, that would ruin some of the initial episodes 1 through 3 kind of like
right
cool, wacky fun.
And then you realize the Rutan is just a glowy ball.
Or, you know, if you knew what the robot looked like before it became the big, giant, crappy robot of doom from Robot.
Yes. But so my big thing with this episode is it just doesn't make sense. Logically incoherent. And now it's funny, I heard an interesting rumor the other day, and it could be pure rumor, but talking on a website, on a Yahoo board, that includes a couple of professional Doctor Who authors for the book series,
mm-hmm.
and they were talking that it's just possible that Paul Cornell did not write the final edit of this. That this actually... And I have actually heard before that this episode went through the most rewrites of any of them. That it went through something like 15 rewrites.
Wow. That's a lot.
And that at least the very last one was actually carried out by one of the script editors, not Paul Cornell. And that Paul Cornell was so either so hard to work with or had so many problems fulfilling the needs of the team that he was basically paid off and...
Now, have they invited him back to write for season...
No, they haven't.
Okay.
And that's part of the rumor is that he was not asked to return. Now, that could be pure rumor, and I don't mean to spread malicious gossip or anything, but I think it's interesting in view of the fact this is the one I find really doesn't work. I wonder if it really was rather unsalvageable plot-wise to begin with. Or could one of the earlier drafts have been better?
I wonder how much of it was... You know, not to defend or say because we weren't there, we don't know, but
no.
How much of this was, you know...
This is purely hypothetical discussion here.
I was watching the little thing on Terrence Dix, where Terrence Dix tells, you know, how he says, he brings writers
what,
in, he says...
On the Horror Fang Rock
yes,
DVD?
There's an extra, where he talks about, okay, this is what I want you to do. You go off and you write, you know, and he gives them the elements, and then he has them go off and write a story.
Right,
and
script, come editors, back. Script editors often do that.
I wonder if, instead of, you know... Being given... Okay, Russell T. Davies, basically when he comes in, he probably has a blank canvas. I mean, he knows where he's going to go, but he can do whatever he wants. Are you following me? And then he might say, he might say, like, if you're going to write, hey, Sarah, I want you to write a story that features this, this, and this.
Right. Yeah, the laundry list.
And then you go off, and you have to write it. I wonder if he was constricted by the elements
by
of the story.
By the laundry list, yeah. I know a lot of J&T era writers were constricted in that way.
Well, J&T like to constrict. Oh, I'm sorry, what?
Be nice.
I'm sorry.
But a lot of script editors do that. Buffy's script editors did that. But maybe this is one where the idea and Paul Cornell just didn't quite gel.
Well, you know, but also I think, you know, the Buffy thing was... You had a team. You didn't have just people just writing just one episode.
Right. That was a very team. I don't know. I really don't know. And we can't say. I just thought that was an interesting little side note.
Yeah.
I don't know Paul Cornell. I don't know Russell T. Davies. I don't know any of this stuff that may or may not have happened. I just thought I'd throw it out there.
And we don't call the set daily and get hung up on. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, nor do we know anyone who does. Anyway, I think, as Philip Hinchcliffe would say on Pyramids of Mars DVD, that Nick has something to say about now.
Oh, good.
But Nick isn't here, so I'm going to attempt to do a light British accent simply to differentiate between me and my American self and Nick.
Okay.
So, I'm probably going to need to, like, take drinks between this because it's rather long.
Okay.
The scenario for this entire episode is, for me, entirely representative of the series. That is, the story has a greater emotional weight and complexity to it than in previous episodes. But with that emotional complexity comes a disorienting lack of intellectual complexity. Ooh, it's hard to do that in a British accent. We can easily imagine the story as it would have been, spread across 4 weeks, Sylvester McCoy bumbling about going, "No ace, don't do it!" Proper technobabbly explanations for everything, this, that, and the other revelation. But there would never have been anything direct about the characters, nothing so uncomfortably real. The Curse of Fenric echoes the confrontations of Father's Day, but the writing shies away from anything real, going more for some sort of shapeless teenager angst. Not that I don't like the Curse of Fenric, in fact I love the Curse of Fenric, but this is something more immediate, a different emphasis, and in hindsight, it makes the story oddly like a dream sequence, where logic bends, monsters just turn up, you meet people you think you recognize but they don't know you, and the people you love come and go like birds, however your relationship with them is in the waking world.
What? Okay.
Well, no, I think I kind of got that. It's
I don't quite agree with the
Curse of Fenric reference.
Well, I think he's dismissing overall what was happening for the character arc. And maybe I'm just reading in from, you know, the New Adventures, where that was explored so much in a much deeper way.
Honestly, I think Curse of Fenric is the least of the ones to examine Ace, just because it is kind of nebulous. They never do pin down what it is we're talking about with her. Ghostlight and Survival do.
Yeah.
But I will react to this. I can actually see this as a Sylvester McCoy story. And I can see it as a rather shallower Sylvester McCoy story.
Well, it would probably only function as a three-part story. I'm not sure you could stretch this out to 90 minutes.
Okay, three or four parts, but you understand.
Yeah.
I can see this being something maybe would involve the Seventh Doctor and Ace.
Which I think I get the impression that Paul Cornell really likes that team. From his I mean, he writes best for them.
Oh, yes, he likes the Seventh Doctor. And actually, they have a kind of a relationship like that in this story.
Yeah.
Anyway. I kind of see what Nick is saying here about this has more specific emotional thrust. I'm not sure that works out totally 100% because I still need this thing called plot. But I think as an 8 to 12 year old, I would have liked this a lot more. I would have I would have held my dad's hand a little tighter because as an 8 year old, I was just sappier.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the few episodes where I think maybe Russell's Let's Write for 8 to 12-year-olds was not only followed, but followed almost exclusively. Because there are other episodes where I feel like they've inserted adult things that didn't need to be there that aren't appropriate for that 8 to 12 audience, but this one feels very much geared for that audience.
And I guess the car has just vanished. It's following them around. It's kind of a loop where I love this little, like, oh, look at the big cell phones from back then. Isn't that funny? Okay, I guess we need more of Nick, since we've run out of things to say.
All right, more Nick. And I'm sorry about this voice, pal, but it's the best I can do.
Hey, you know, if he doesn't get on the commentaries, this is what he gets. This will encourage him next year.
Next year, we will find a way to get you on the set, I promise. Anyway, as I said the other day to my friend Sarah... Ooh, that's me. I'm reminded of a piece Paul Cornell wrote for some big poll of top 10 Doctor Who stories for DWM. He was writing about the appeal of City of Death, and described the experience of watching television with family, basically that it was a springboard to conversation. In this case, memories of Paris and visits to France were summoned up and anecdotes filled the air. Suitable for a much-loved story like City of Death. Well, Father's Day seems to me to be another story you could talk about a lot. The kind of thing that would stir the memory in strange ways. I will stress that the subtext of Father's Day is not a debate on morals or judgment. It's talking about wish fulfillment, about grief, about childhood, about the past. The big nostalgia factor of the 1980s, the stolen children. Is this the first time children have been directly threatened in the series? Actually, it might be.
I'm trying to think.
Anyway,
except for making them watch Web Planet back in the 60s. Oh, I'm sorry.
The fairy tale aspect of explanation, and it all seems richly coherent to me, and it fits perfectly with Doctor Who, the children's series that appeals to a family audience.
Okay. The irony for that is, I remember reading that article that he's referring to, talking about City of Death, that Paul Cornell, and I remember one of the things that he said that was memorable is that in episode 3, things actually happen in episode 3 of City of Death, mm-hmm. which is why he likes it, which is ironic because pretty much from the time that Rose saves her dad until the end, nothing happens.
Right.
Anyway, I'm just...
I should point out here, I read something wrong. I've slipped a couple times, but I read the phrase loved up, as in suitable for a loved up story like City of Death. I read that as much loved, and I think what he actually means is a story that's very...
It's very popular in the fan community.
Well, and he could also mean it's a story that involves a lot of, love.
Well, Tom and Lala did get married while they were filming it.
Right. I mean, I think that maybe what... Either way it works, but...
Hence why Tom probably won't do a commentary on it, because he'd be like, I married that bitch, what the hell?
No, neither of them will. Anyway, sorry, Nick, if I occasionally get your words wrong. I'm not perfect, but I do see what he means here. And again, I think this is an important thing. This is a story that will appeal to children, in that sort of, what would happen if my dad died?
Yeah.
Or maybe somebody whose father did die, unfortunately, in that regard, I think it seems somewhat out of place in the rest of the series.
It is kind of a sidestep.
It's an anomaly. I mean,
spoiler warning, unless somehow this, and, maybe they intended to do something more with this affecting Rose, I don't know. Maybe now looking back and thinking about what happens with who Bad Wolf is and what Bad Wolf becomes, as Bad Wolf Rose saves Captain Jack, maybe that explains why she saves Captain Jack only.
Maybe.
But it'd be interesting to see, I don't know. Maybe Rose, next season, have some regrets about not using the power to maybe save her father.
Maybe, yeah. Well, Nick continues here by,
Mommy's gone!
Yes. Little Mickey, I guess. By,
Oh, Mickey, you're so fine, you're so fine. You blow my mind. Hey, Mickey. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Michael. That was...
We made it through, 8 commentaries without doing that, haven't we?
Is Mickey in 8 episodes?
Seems like everyone we do seems to involve Mickey somehow. How the hell do we draw that lot?
Particularly when we didn't do Aliens of London or World War III.
We do seem to run Mickey down a lot.
Oh, he's turning the corner in the exact same way he does in Parting of the Ways, I might add.
Yes, just going back to my theory that Mickey is like a dog and can hear the TARDIS materializing from anywhere in London and come running.
Yep. Anyway, Nick goes on about the family audience. I think we have to bear in mind that family audience. A difficult audience to snag, especially when in recent years it hasn't been drama fishing for them on BBC One. It's been takeaway television, game show curry with celebrities bobbing around in it. I kind of like that. You can't write down to this audience, but neither can you ask them to give a toss about the Blinovich limitation effect. You can?
Oh, I don't know.
Which is kind of interesting, because I think that's the one thing he does use in this, is the Blinovich limitation effect. Granted, Cornell could have slipped in a line or two here to make the background make a bit more sense. Flourishes like, gosh, the TARDIS has gone, moments don't really help. Especially because most fans would be happy, I think, just to have technobabble that joins up. I think he's basically right. Any old technobabble would work. It's the fact that there aren't explanations in this at all.
Now, the one thing I do like about this, and seeing that the monsters, and I guess we'll get to it in a few minutes, is the Doctor... You get the feeling of the Doctor being isolated. There's a line at some point where he says, oh, if only the Time Lords were still around, they would help take care of this problem.
Here we go.
Okay.
There's some metaphor, vague metaphor about wounds, and then the catch-all, if my people were around, it wouldn't happen like this.
Yeah.
That's all right for me, but not all right for people who are going to care about the backstory. But those people are going to be watching the show anyway. They're not the arbiters of the story. And I think Cornell's intended audience is going to be scared by the monsters and sad about the Tylers. Rose, who just wants to have a dad and doesn't want to start World War III. Peter, who has given one more chance to be a dad to his little girl. Jackie, who always gets left behind, who has to become a widow because of some stupid mistake. The audience has no need to worry over whether the Reapers are the Chronovores or not, and how many time streams get mucked about with. They've got front row seats for a rich and unique human drama that cannot be told by any other by any other television show on the earth. I'll actually just step out of line here and say I buy that one. Because there's a level here that I know I dislike this episode because I've seen too goddamn much science fiction television. I've seen Star Trek. I've seen Back to the Future. I've seen endless episodes of Doctor Who and, you know, time travel stuff up the wazoo. If I didn't give a crap about that stuff, I'd probably actually really like this episode. Because if you're just general British audience number 53,000, and you sit down for a nice evening Saturday program, I think this probably works just fine.
It could. I don't know. I'm not sure, you know, and I kind of, maybe I think about this, you know, what story of this of the new series would I want to show as someone...
This is a creepy shot, I might add. These shots here.
If I just wanted them to see, you know, why I like Doctor Who. I don't know if this would be it.
No, I don't... See, I think this is, Actually, I did read something online where somebody referred to this as good television but bad Doctor Who. And I'm not sure I agree with that 100%, but I can see where he's going with that.
And I guess... Maybe this is one of the things for me of, you know, having seen so much Doctor Who, if I wasn't a big... in other things... The second, you know, we see the car the first time, and it's kind of mysterious, but the second time we see the car, and it stops and vanishes, and the guy throws his hand up, it's not very hard to figure out what's going to be needed to do what needs to be done. It's, like, we're at the 21-minute mark, and this one lasts, what, 42, 45 minutes?
Something like that, yeah.
So I figured this out, and I've still got 22 minutes to go of this story. I figured out what needs to be done.
Yeah.
And I guess I just don't like stories where I figure out things too early, because then it makes, to me, it makes the characters seem dumb.
Yes,
because they're not noticing the things that I, you know, that I am, and putting it all together as quickly as I am.
Right, but bear this in mind, Michael. Just let me throw this out, play devil's advocate.
I know, for kids.
Well, but haven't you seen, like, even more television science fiction than I have?
Well, that is true.
I mean, you know this is going to happen this way, because you've seen this same story again and again and again. If you were 8 years old, and not you...
Which would be good for the 8-year-old, because hopefully you wouldn't become, you know, 32 in May. So.
maybe that wouldn't be the case.
Yeah, I guess so. And, you know, again, I have to remind myself this is not written for people who are 32 years old and have no life.
And know Doctor Who really intimately well.
Yes, and have actually seen the Web Planet more than once. Okay, I'm sorry.
It's not the worst episode I can think of, but, you know.
Well, you know.
I'll buy the DVD. It's a 60s DVD. It sounds fun to me. I mean, I like the first three episodes.
Well, you know. I am going into the DVD with an open mind. I'm going to try to enjoy it this time.
Now, here's an interesting thing. I'm just going to throw this one out.
Yeah.
This is something that annoys me. This is the first of three consecutive unwed pregnancies. There's one in this episode, there's one in The Doctor Dances, and there's one in Boomtown.
Oh, yeah, that is true.
I have absolutely no idea why this was done. I mean, I'm sure there's, like, a huge unwed pregnancy rate in Britain or something. But it just kind of felt to me like, are we making a point? Is there something that needs to be said?
I don't know. You know, or it could just be one of those coincidental things.
Oh, it's a bad coincidence then, because I never could figure out why it was done. I mean, the one with Nancy makes perfect sense for the story, but these two, eh.
And going back, I haven't seen these 17 billion times, like the old series.
Right.
Did Rose's parents have to get married? Do you wonder? Start to wonder?
I can't remember if they mentioned
I don't remember if that... You know, that's just a thought that comes to me, because, you know, we have commented at other times, Rose, the intergalactic flirt / slut.
I almost want to say it is mentioned at some point that that's what happened.
You know, I just wonder if the Doctor, in, you know, going back to my dark, manipulative Doctor, he took her to unwed mothers and went, all right, if you keep hooking up with Adam and Mickey and Captain Jack and every sailor in port, this could happen to you, and you'll have to marry a Dalek. Or Slavine.
Or Jack.
I think she'd like to marry Jack.
Yeah, I don't think Jack would marry her, though.
Well, you know.
Unless it was a very open relationship.
And he could hook up with the Doctor.
That would be interesting.
anyway, moving on.
But no, you could well be right. Anyway.
But I'm reading in my preference for looking to the Doctor as more of a manipulator of events. And you know, this could be a McCoy story. You know, you don't sense the kind of... I don't want to say malevolence that I got or the theory of testing Rose that he gets in...
No, no.
Very... Like, End of the World, where he's like, oh, look, it's the end of the world, and your world's ending. How? So, how's that happening for you?
Yeah,
so,
right.
Want to go out for a drink?
Yeah, the Seventh Doctor, you know, played more games.
You know, but because he does get very mad at... Does he get mad at her in this story?
Yes.
Yes, it's the one where he gets very mad at her for feeling used.
Right.
Which is ironic, since, you know, he puts her through all these tests. You know, maybe this was some kind of test for her, and, you know, because, you know, that was supposed to be the difference. You know, Adam goes through time and hasn't seen Back to the Future Part 2 and doesn't know that it's not going to work. Okay, so let's read more of Nick, because they've heard us blather for 7 episodes now.
I do think it's interesting that we're actually having a commentary this time.
Instead of us wacky and silly?
Yeah, I mean, we're actually, like, talking about the themes of the episode and crap. Well, we shouldn't do this again.
we still got 10 minutes. Well, plus, you know, Billie Piper's not anything really revealing and hot in this episode.
No, she's very cute in Boomtown.
Well, anyway.
Well, I'm just going to read this one. I'm not sure we can really respond, comment to it, but I think it's worthwhile.
All right.
An interesting thing to discuss could be the original concept for the episode as delivered to Paul Cornell. Russell T. Davies describes the story as a cheap, low-budget period piece in which Rose must agonize over whether or not to try and save her dad. Meanwhile, we see the Doctor turn up all over the place, chatting to all kinds of people who knew Pete Tyler. I imagine scenes in the local pub, at wedding parties, comic scenes in hen parties, maybe first dates... The Doctor is an observer of human nature, always outside the window, never able to directly relate. Rose is the protagonist. I've got a choice. Monsters and life or death. Sounds a bit dull for a 45-minute episode, but it does fit in perfectly with Rose's period of growing up, the need to make peace with the past and live only for the future. Okay. I like how straightforward that is, especially considering the weird shit that's been done in the books and audio adventures over the years. What makes us human? Our past, our parents, our choices. Cornell keeps that questioning, but turns it up a notch. The whole issue is there at a higher emotional register, if not really complexity. Most people could probably see the end coming. Fans, at least. Fans, definitely. But it's a sign that the series wasn't tired, wasn't straining to be new. Back to square one, the many possibilities of Doctor Who, the questions it can ask, places it can go. It's rejuvenating, and it's brave. The pitch says, a tiny human story, as important as any grand sci-fi plot. Well,
I'm not sure.
It's a nice pitch.
The concept would seem to work more for the Troughton Doctor, or one of the original two Doctors, where they were less of an active role. Where, you know, the companions were the ones who did the action thing.
You're telling me that the Ninth Doctor is an active role? We could debate that from now till next Sunday.
I don't know. I just don't...
But I mean, this series is very much about Rose. And yeah. I can see what Nick's saying about her need to kind of let go of the past and move on. That's kind of the ultimate conclusion she comes to in Parting of the Ways.
Of course, you know, she is only 19.
Yeah,
you know, it's hard to remember that because Billie Piper does look a little bit older than 19.
Mostly because she is.
Especially in those pictures that she showed me earlier. Oh, I'm sorry. She's looks definitely 20.
Thank God.
Otherwise, we'd be going to jail.
Ah, the glowy TARDIS key. This is when it all just starts to go haywire for me. I have no idea how this works. None.
But do we have any idea how the TARDIS works in the other episode?
But how do you recharge the key with a battery? And I give up.
Well, you know, how do you open the lock of the TARDIS? You know, there's 1,700 different ways to do that. Oh, you have to be a Time Lord. Oh, you don't. Oh, you know. So anyway.
One more. Well, we've just got little comments here on out, but here's a good one. On the BBC Confidential with this episode, Eccleston talks about time being part of the natural order of things. And isn't that partly the story told over all 13 episodes? The natural order of things that we sometimes refuse or ignore or try to escape. That's actually a good point.
Yeah.
The whole series is a lot about... maybe not so much time as sort of your personal fate. Not fate, but the choices you make. It's a lot about that. Also, a lovely theme over all 15 episodes of people coming back to life or coming back from the dead. Just about every single episode. Think about it.
That is true.
Yeah.
What the hell is up with that shirt?
It's very purple.
Who told him that look was good? I mean, besides J&T, who wore Hawaiian shirts all the time.
Yeah, well, J&T had some amazing taste.
He had some bad fashion sense.
The beard wasn't working so well either.
Well, he needed to trim that thing up. Okay, anyway, moving on.
Yes.
But I guess it does look very 80s, I guess.
Yeah. This is sad. These comments that Nick has made make me hate Father's Day less.
Oh, no!
Damn it! Don't you just want to reach out and hug Billy Piper?
You want to do that no matter what she's doing.
She's very adorable in this. I mean, she's going to cry and stuff. And she's probably going to do the tongue between the teeth thing that I like so much.
I don't really pay that much attention to that.
I'll show you. It's a nice one, End of the World.
And I'm sure you've looped it and watched it many, many times.
Yeah, well. You want to throw in a little call to Nicola right now?
No. I think we've actually made it through a whole commentary without me asking Nicola Bryant to call me. I think we should keep that going.
What is it you're not going to say, Michael?
I don't know. Nicola, call me! I'm serious! Come on, I'm sitting here. I'm just saying. All right. You knew we couldn't make it through a whole commentary without that coming in.
I forced that hand.
We were doing so well for the first 25 minutes.
And look, the TARDIS is materializing around the key. I don't get it.
Yeah, and I know, you know, back to something Nick said before you finish up his comments. I don't really buy that these are the Chronovores. They don't necessarily have to be.
No, I don't think he's saying they are. I think just some
fans... I just heard some of the online were like, yeah. Oh, they have to be. It's the same... No, it's not. Because then we could have the Tom Tit machine. Look, I said tit on the commentary. And not in a dirty way.
I nearly said something else on one of the others. It was, also had the it syllable in it, but...
You mean bit? No. Is it the bit rate you were going to
record
it?
It was a longer word.
Git? You almost called someone a git?
Nope.
The magical TARDIS. It can do everything.
Yes, it can. There's Jackie's magical hair.
It can chop. It can probably... It's probably sharp enough.
Julian fries.
That's right.
So, Michael, once we're done with these commentaries, what are we going to do with our lives?
Well, we could comment on old Doctor... On yeah, classic
we,
Doctor
we were
Who.
Thinking about doing some classic Doctor Who commentaries, putting them on the internet.
Which, you know, then the ones that we violently disagree on, which would be interesting.
I think that'd be fun.
Well, I think we should go back and start with the telemovie, because that was where we met and started
one.
The whole thing. And
yeah.
I haven't seen it in 10 years. Not all the way through.
And if you can actually make it through the Rose commentary where it sounds like we're talking in a cave...
Or the tin can that is sliced through by the Vegematic TARDIS.
you will hear how it is we met.
Yes. So it is worth listening to.
If you can make it.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Something to do with filters and it's bad. But, yeah.
But at least it wasn't lost like our original Dalek commentary.
Yeah, we're still bitter about that.
Not really, because I think our second one's actually better.
Our second one's better. But, yeah, we did a lot of these things.
God, we really need a life. Seriously, I guess I'm gonna have to stop obsessing about Nicola and actually find a girlfriend.
Well,
I don't know. No, not really.
Doing that too. Here's another one from Nick.
Okay.
By the way, I love the Reapers. I think the design is brilliant, and they are the scariest bits of this whole new series of Doctor Who. Can't say I agree with that quite.
No.
The scene where children are abducted is incredibly eerie, and I love it.
Yeah, that's cool. But
the empty child is scarier.
Well, I think the empty child is scary from, you know, this, and I think I make this point in my commentary of, you know, it's the Robert Holmes scary. It's everyday things are scary.
Right.
Things that should be safe are scary. Like, you know, you're not going to walk down the street and see the giant Reaper.
Right.
But you are going to see, like, plastic flowers.
Right.
Or shop dummies.
Right. Anyway, he does kind of conclude, and there's one more little bit I want to read towards the end. I think there are two sides to this story, and if one of them is slightly underdeveloped, in the end, the finished product is not much poorer for it, because the other side, the bit that scares, shocks, and provokes feeling within us, is very well made.
Oh, sure, it is very well made. Technically, it's very well done.
I don't think the acting's bad either. I mean, it's... Although, I think, actually, Simon Pegg might have been more effective in this role of Rose's father.
But, you know, I mean, the new Star Wars movies look and sound, I mean, technically, are
light years
ahead of... The original trilogy, but the original trilogy actually connects to you on an emotional level.
You know, a friend of mine just told me today that she saw Star Wars for the first time, quote-unquote, in order. I mean, she'd never seen them before, but somebody loaned them to her in order.
How'd she
get... from 1 to 6.
How'd she get episode 3?
Oh. Well, they took her to the theater.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it was like a...
Yeah, I'm not sure how that would feel, because...
I think it'd be awful, but...
I think after episode 1, I'd be sitting there going like, why does everybody love this so much?
Yeah. I was trying to explain to her why it is like, we're all so angry about the remade Star Wars.
You know, well, if you haven't ever seen Greedo not shooting first, you just don't.
I've got an old VHS of it somewhere.
Oh, I do too. I've kept several.
I mean, I don't mind the remade Empire Strikes Back. He only like put in some backdrops for that one.
They put in Luke screaming on Falling the Way Down.
Oh.
Then he took it out for the DVD because he realized that, but he won't take out Greedo shooting first.
Yeah, well, that's just daft. Anyway, back to Doctor Who.
Okay.
This is a bit when you want to hug Billy because she's...
Well, but... Okay, we've already made that point. You always want to hug Billy.
But she's sad.
I'll be sad, too. She's going to lose her father, and she's lost her father figure, her surrogate father figure.
But she's sad.
I know she's sad. And, you know, this is probably about the time she was getting divorced. And she was like, you know...
And let's pose for Arena in a series of highly revealing but... very aesthetically pleasing photographs.
Well.
Which cannot be found on this DVD set at all.
Depression is good for us. It's good she took out her depression in that way, so we could enjoy. But anyway.
I do have...
Do we have more comments from Nick?
I have, well, two more. One I want to say at the very end.
Okay.
But I have a good one here because Pete is about to sacrifice himself.
Yes.
Yes. And this is pretty sad. This is the bit where if I was 8, I would be holding on to my dad pretty hard. Because Daddy used to watch the science fiction shows with me when I was a little girl, etc. But she's going to cry.
And Jackie realizes, oh, you're really my daughter.
And she really needs to get rid of that hair.
And, you know.
Anyway, here we go. Here's another little thing. When Pete runs out of the church at the end, Cornell suggested a certain Saint Etienne song be played. I'm sorry, I don't know how that's pronounced.
That's okay. I won't tell anyone. I don't know either, so.
I looked up the lyrics and realized suddenly which song it was. I thought I'd send through the chorus, and if anybody present at the recording knows the tune, could they please give it a quick rendition? I happen to know why the song wasn't played. It's because it would undoubtedly have had the BBC switchboard jammed by viewers suddenly incapacitated by weeping. Well, unfortunately, neither Michael of us know the song, and even if we did, we probably wouldn't embarrass ourselves by singing it.
Yeah, see... We want people to actually listen to the commentaries beyond this one, and if they think, dear God, they might sing again.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to find the song and put in a little sample of it.
And hopefully they won't sue us. Of course, you know, if you bought this on eBay, and you're not one of the chosen 10, or you've gotten it from a friend, or if you paid any money for this set.
Yeah, that's wrong, because the BBC owns Doctor Who, and I made this set.
And we just did it for fun.
Yeah,
we did. As if you couldn't tell from the quality of the commentary.
Okay, so here we go. And this is the, I'm afraid I don't know the name, but, here's where I'm going to put in the Saint Etienne song that, Paul Cornell suggested should be played in tandem with this scene here. So, here you go, Nick.
BBC because they were crying. I don't understand that.
Well, if the song was really sad.
Well, I know, but I don't ever call it... You know, like when that episode of Buffy from season 2 aired,
Well, people seem to call the BBC switchboard for no good reason. Like, because the Unquiet Dead was too scary.
Well, yeah, but Mary Whitehouse has nothing else to do with her time.
Possibly because she's dead?
Well, maybe she's possessing people. Would explain
the Unquiet
a lot,
Dead. anyway.
I think she should make a villain for the next series called The White House. Oh, wait.
No, but I hear Chris Evans will be returning to play the devil. Or not returning, but, you know, Billy Piper's ex-husband.
Oh, the ironies of ironies.
She apparently thinks it's a very funny idea.
Well, but, you know, hey, who's to say that Rose makes it through the entire next series? She may leave, you know, three quarters of the way through.
No, I think she's signed up for the whole season.
Oh, okay. Well, she's got to get her money. Hey, didn't Eccleston win some kind of, like, award or something recently?
Yeah,
like
top
best
TV actor for Doctor Who for something in Britain. And this little girl is really cute.
Yeah.
Big eyes.
This is kind of like, oh, this is like the Back to the Future, you know, like the end of Back to the Future where, you know, suddenly, you know, Dad's cool and he's written the book and Biff's the one shining up the car. And then we actually have the truck in the garage.
Yep.
You know. I don't know. I think the pieces are all there. I'm just not sure that they fit into an overall good, coherent picture.
Well, I think it's worth it that we actually discuss one of these episodes instead of just tearing it apart.
Or gushing.
Yeah, I know our fans are probably disappointed we didn't just lambaste this thing.
Oh, I know. Our two fans.
That would be you and me.
Yeah, because who else is going to listen to this? I mean, except, hey, Brian, how you doing? Good to see you. I'm sorry, I didn't say hi to you earlier. I'm sorry. I've got like 12 commentaries. I haven't said hi to Brian yet.
See,
he shouts out to me like in the first 5 minutes of his.
Yeah. Holla to Brian, Mayor, Jamie, Joe, Nick, Ian, Dan, Matt. And any of you illegal people who
we might send these over to our good friends over at Slice of Sci-Fi, because they haven't gotten to see the series yet. They might actually hear this. So, hey guys, how you doing? Thanks.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Yeah. Oh, and here's the preview for the next episode, which is...
Empty Child.
Very good. Was that scene actually in the episode?
Yeah.
Okay. I show you what I know. This was the one... No, this was the one I commented on. Okay, that's good.
No, this is the one I commented on.
This shows you how much attention I'm paying. Oh, in the commentary. Oh, is that in my episode?
No, it's in mine.
What the hell?
And I actually get to show this episode in a class in a couple of weeks.
Cool.
Or some scenes from it, and that's going to be fun.
There's Captain Jack.
Get to point out how Jack is basically one big mockery of the Doctor, and how he would be done on an American TV show.
Well, and we almost had that with McGann.
You know, or Sylvester Stallone, depending on how you think about it.
Oh, that just makes me want to vomit.
Or Pierce Brosnan.
That wouldn't be as bad as Stallone.
Daleks.
Young Rose. Julia Joyce.
Julia Joyce is a cute kid.
I just like the alliteration in her name. Mm-hmm. You should get in Nick's comment before we run out of credits.
I should. I would like his comment to be the very last one. So I think...
See y'all. Bye.
Yeah. This is it for us. This is the last one we're recording.
Oh, don't say that. Last time you said that, we had to get back together. We had to get the band back together.
So anyway, last comment goes to Nick. I think it's appropriate. Kind of sums up the whole conflict about Father's Day. Nobody likes everything, and not everyone should like the same things.
Look, we can buy more stuff! Damn it! Damn you, BBC! You have ruined our coolness!